COVID is ravaging the Premier League and games are getting postponed left and right, but fear not, Over the Top is here to cure your ills. And even better, the Boxing Day matches are on. Seemingly. Match week 18, I'm Kyle and I've got my man Justin here. How you doing?
Good. I mean, not just EPL, but COVID's going round, man. Omicron. It's spreading not just EPL. We got NFL games getting moved here in the States, NBA games getting called off. We both went to the University of Washington, Kyle. The whole basketball team had to cancel and postpone games for 3 weeks because they all got COVID. So it's going around. It's important to stay safe during the holidays and all that. But as far as our podcast and EPL is concerned, some teams that came back after not playing and played hard, and some games, albeit six of them this week, were canceled because of COVID. So it's been an interesting time. I know our viewers at home were wondering, and, you know, we're getting our fan mail and, you know, sent to you and I, where they're saying, like, you know, where's Kyle and Justin? What happened last week? It's like, well, there were no games. What do you want us to talk? I mean, we can sit here and talk for an hour, but I mean, let's talk about something meaningful, right?
No, I figured, you know, we both figured COVID would still be something to talk about a week from now. And, you know, what's even weirder is the last episode came out a little over a week ago. And there have been three match weeks, because this is just the Premier League in December. It's just crazy
how it is. So. Yeah. And we have like three more, right? 26th, the 28th, and the first, I guess, is.
First and then the second. Yeah. No, it's a weird one. And then, you know, I didn't enter this in our sort of like match notes or anything like that, but I was reading some statistics on vaccination rates in both the UK and in the Premier League, and comparing that to the US, you know, I know this isn't a healthcare pod or something like that. This isn't, you know, we're trying to keep the EPL, but 90%, I think it was, or maybe it was either 85 or 90% of people in the UK are vaccinated, which is amazing. And in the Premier League, there are 25% of players who are unvaccinated. That is so much higher than I was.
Unvaccinated?
What's that?
You say unvaccinated?
Unvaccinated, just 25%. Yeah. Honestly, with players coming from all over the world, all sorts of misinformation out there. 25%.
Yeah, I think it's over, because I saw a similar study of like vaccination rates among all the big European leagues, and Serie A was like 95, and La Liga is like 91, wow. Yada, yada. And EPL was around 68, I think was the graphic. This was a week ago, so it could be higher now, but it was like, the hell is going on in the EPL? And of course, what's the league that's getting all these games canceled? It's the EPL. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. I mean, we'll see if there's more postponements. As you said in the intro, Boxing Day is still on as of now, and there are 10 slated matchups. No games have been canceled. Some teams haven't played in a while, a la Brighton, Leicester haven't played in a while. Mm-hmm. Burnley haven't played in a while because canceled games, but they had like the snow game that was canceled against Tottenham. So some teams have crazy games in hand, like Spurs. I mean, they made one of them up, but like some teams have crazy games in hand where others like Newcastle don't, and then like Burnley do. So it's all over the place right now.
Yeah, no, totally. And Arsenal played 18 games. It's just very strange, and this has all happened so quickly, because I mean, I think it was at this point, God, it wasn't even 2 weeks ago, whenever that last round of Champions League games was happening. I think it was, about 10 days ago. Well, it might have actually been 2 weeks ago. Started getting murmurings that there were some cases here and there, and that was kind of when Omicron was starting to spread around the world. But first it was, you know, my Spurs who came down with it. First it was like 5 or 6 cases. Next day, 13 cases, and it just kept rising and rising and rising. And you know, I know we definitely do not talk about the Conference League on this podcast. Please, God, no.
No, why would we?
But, you know, Spurs got in the situation where they, you know, UEFA didn't cancel the game or postpone it, but Spurs just made this announcement saying we wouldn't be playing, you know, caused some issues and, you know, some banter is going around here and there. But also at the same time, you're hearing murmurings about Leicester, Watford, and, you know, within a matter of, you know, 2 to 3 days, it seemed to spread across every single Premier League team, just about. And so in match week 16, I think it was Spurs Brighton was postponed. Match week 17, you know, a handful more. You know, United Brentford would have been a good one. Spurs Leicester. It's just, it's going fast.
It's going fast. Hopefully, you know, things turn around and we get more matches soon, but I have a feeling we could get a few more matches canceled by the end of the year for sure. Just given what's going on. But this week we did have a few games. We did have four this week, and we had a few last week because we didn't cover. And one of the most entertaining games of likely the season involved your team. Spurs hosted Liverpool at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Are they calling it White Hart Lane still?
No, not anymore.
I didn't think so.
Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, aka they're trying to sell the naming rights.
2-2 to Liverpool. I mean, man, there's so much to dissect in this game. What, I mean, 2-2 is probably an understatement of how this game and how back and forth it was and how many chances there were. What are your overall general thoughts from this game? Because you have stake in this game. God. I was watching it as a neutral, and I had a fantastic time. You probably had a less fantastic time watching this.
No, I even think, you know, maybe Liverpool fans had the worst time watching it just because the COVID situation, kind of unperforming, this and that. But I think even Liverpool fans pretty much enjoyed it. Across the board, everyone seemed to have a good time. But it's hard to know where to start. So many talking points. But what I will say is, for me, this is one of, if not the games of the season. I think it was, enjoyment was there for just about everyone. You know, Liverpool going in this game with a lot of COVID cases, specifically in midfield, plus Van Dijk. And Spurs just coming back from COVID. And, you know, I kind of, Spurs fans feared the worst. You know, we all thought we were just going to get, you know, an ass whooping. Lo and behold, you know, they played really hard, had really good fitness levels. And I just think at a very high level, this was a game that just about everyone can enjoy. This is what makes the Premier League the Premier League. It's just back and forth over and over. I mean, Spurs, we'll get into stats, but Spurs had more clear-cut chances, but Liverpool, like, peppered the goal at different moments. So
especially, like, a couple 15-minute segments of the game, like we were talking before, the end of the first half, Liverpool were dominant, I thought, and then a portion of the second half before the red card. So
definitely, but, I mean, good goals, good play, big calls or non-calls, all of which I'm sure we'll get into. But, you know, as a neutral, what were you thinking about this game?
Yeah, I mean, back and forth, right? I mean, nonstop action. You had almost everything from, you had a little too much referee involvement because of the decisions/indecisions. You had great counterattacking play. You had some build-up play. You had some awful defense. You had goalkeeping errors. You had all of it. It was all compact into this 90-minute game. So it made it really fantastic to watch as a neutral. I thought the way that Tottenham came out and attacked and executed was really impressive, number one. And something that, you know, there's a lot to be disappointed about maybe as a Spurs fan, but I think there's a lot to take away from this game too. Kane looked in build-up play and in positioning really sharp. I thought that Spurs getting out of defensive situations and getting the ball to their playmakers was, they did a really nice job of that. I thought their defense played better than expected. I know they gave up two goals, but they're playing Jota, Mane, and Salah, and Salah relatively was quiet. So, and relatively, right? He wasn't bad by any stretch of the, you know, imagination. So I think those are positives. And then on the Liverpool side, I mean, the way that they can generate attack without, I mean, let's just say it, their whole starting midfield, essentially, and their best defender. And they can still generate attack. Robertson and Alexander-Arnold can still get forward because that was a problem they had last season when Van Dijk was out. Those players wouldn't get forward and generate attacks. They were plenty involved, Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And then the front three are dangerous, and Diogo Jota continues to prove why he's starting. So from both sides, I think it was a fair result. You could argue there are certain stats and whatever, but I think a draw is a fair result.
No, definitely. And I totally agree with what you're saying about Liverpool. I was just blown away that, you know, let's be honest, they didn't play very well. They had a sort of staffing shortage, if you will. And just how dangerous they still are, just mind-blowing, man. And then even with, you know, Van Dijk out, I was so impressed with Konate as well. I mean, God, what a signing, what a player they've got on their hands. So I was really impressed with that. From a Spurs angle, this was the most Conte performance that I've seen, definitely, because what stood out to me more than anything was just how well positioned they were and how well they stuck together as a unit positionally, both in attack and in defense. And to me, that just is the mark of a great, great, great tactical manager who really knows how to drill his players. So, look, we'll talk about it more in depth about the chances and whatnot, but so many positives that Spurs fans can take here. So many.
For sure. And I mean, just think of all the days that Spurs players had to study Conte's system at home, you know, looking at their iPads and, you know, cementing the 5-3-2 in their brains. So, yeah,
but the fitness is what I did not expect. Like that, no. That literally doesn't make sense to me. And I don't really know. I don't really know how they did that part.
We can get into player performances and ratings and what our thoughts of Dele Alli was, but I don't think either of us can argue he was flying around the pitch.
Yeah. And our favorite of the pod, Harry Winks as well.
Yeah, friend of the pod.
Friend, yeah. You know him on a first name basis. Good old Harry.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that that tackle led to a goal and just his tenacity, I'll say it.
Yeah.
It was Ballon d'Or, and I can't pronounce that word for the life of me. Ballon d'Or worthy.
Shut up, man. Shut up. Let's sign him up. Let's give him a contract extension.
Let's talk about the controversy, because everyone loves controversy and the spiciness. Let's start with the red cards or lack of. So we had two big moments in this game. The first one being in the first half, I think in the 30th-ish sort of minute, Andy Robertson is going for the ball. Harry Kane's trying to get it as well, slides in. Studs are up around the ankle, gets called as a foul and a yellow card. VAR does not intervene. The referee does not go and check the monitor, so it stays as a yellow card. Meanwhile, Jurgen Klopp is going absolutely batshit crazy on the sideline, you know, calling for a red card. We have an incident in the second half where, who is the Spurs player that was kicked?
Emerson.
Emerson, that's right. Andy Robertson absolutely just fucking chops him with his leg, not even going for the ball. It's just like the hardest kick you could imagine, just trying to take out his leg. And that does get called as a yellow card initially, but VAR intervenes, tells the referee to go check the monitor, relatively short check, and changes the yellow to a straight red. Kyle, what do you think of the calls? Do you think they were correct? Do you think they were both incorrect? What do you think of the calls and how that shaped the game?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely, one could have shaped the game, and the second one did not ultimately, but the Kane one, all right, I mean, this was after the first goal. Spurs were kind of in the ascendancy shortly after this call. I think Liverpool, that's when they really put the pressure on, started peppering the goal, but Kane is a lucky, lucky boy. I think almost everyone unanimously agree on this. I would hope so. Otherwise, you're totally deluded. A totally deluded Spurs fan, which I try not to be. But the studs are high, and I know he's going for the ball, and it could be a lot higher, because usually when these red cards are called, you know, it has to be higher than the ankle. It's about ankle level, but that's a dangerous challenge, Justin. And like the speed at which he's like, you know, busting a gut to get there as well. And even in live time, as he was making it, it looked totally reckless. So he's incredibly lucky. If, you know, Robertson's foot is on the ground, that could be a really bad injury. So, and then Kane after the game saying like, oh, I thought it was a good hard challenge. I was like, dude, you're crazy. He's incredibly lucky, man. Honestly, the second one though, it's funny because when we were talking about it during the game, I actually told you I didn't think it was a red. I didn't think either were at the time, which is total nonsense. I must have been, like, you know,
your 19
blood must have been pumping through my blood must have been pumping through my veins. But I didn't think that Robertson was a red card. But when I saw the replay, like, God, dude, he didn't even go for the ball. And the intent alone, and it was, you know, I know studs weren't involved, but that is, it's painful, man. And, you know, Emerson did like a full 180 somersault, basically. So ultimately, they both should have been red cards in my eyes. And I don't know, are we in agreement about that?
I agree. I said at the time, Kane should have got it. And I said that Robertson. Yeah, I think they were both reds. That it would have been interesting to see if the Kane was given red, how that would have changed the game. Obviously, right. That's impossible to say. So we'll see. Lots of controversy there, though.
You think it probably would, though, right?
What's that?
You think it probably would, though, right?
I mean, inevitably. I mean, any game, there's a red card given in the first half, right? That's just totally changes Tottenham's shape and how they attack, and, you know, because they were countering well in both halves. And so if you take one of those players out and put him into defense, then you don't have two players up there. And by the two players, I mean Son and Kane. So
yeah,
that would have changed a lot. But that was only part of the refereeing decisions, the red card. We also had two, maybe three, but two realistic penalty shouts in this game. The first half, Diogo Jota goes down in the box because Emerson comes in from behind and gets him. Diogo Jota had the ball. He has in a good position to shoot, took a couple extra steps and turned his back towards the, where his back was showing towards the defender, which is Emerson, and Emerson ran into him and Diogo Jota fell down. Penalty was not called, not reviewed.
Yeah.
The second one was in the second half. Dele Alli had the ball in the box. Defender had two hands on him and Dele Alli fell over in the box. That one was not given as well. In my opinion, I'll start this one off. I think that the Diogo Jota one was much worse. As in, should have been a penalty versus the Dele Alli. I thought he was putting his plant foot to try and kick it with his left foot, and Emerson, not playing the ball, comes in as Diogo Jota's turning and runs into his back, and Diogo Jota falls over. I thought that should have been a penalty. As soft as you may want to call it, and definitely not, you know, in the spirit of how we grew up watching soccer, I think that is a definition of a penalty. Whereas the Dele Alli one, I thought would have been really soft and there was minimal contact and he kind of fell over and didn't. I think he knew it wasn't a penalty either. So that's my take on it. Where's your head at?
I mean, at a very high level, and including the third one is I think the Winks one as well on the edge of the box.
Yeah, I just don't think.
I don't think any of them are penalties personally. And I know this might be kind of a hot take in this day and age, but to me, well, first I should say that the Dele and the Winks one, the Liverpool defender had their hands on their backs, or I think Winks was kind of like shoulder, and
the
usually
was
that
first or the back, yeah,
and usually that spells bad news, but there's minimal contact for both, and I mean Dele isn't even asking for the penalty after it, so I don't think those are penalties either. I think it would be incredibly soft, and I try to put myself in Liverpool's shoes. I would be outraged if penalties were given for either of those. Where we differ, though, and we differ during the game as well, as Emerson won on Jota. Look, Emerson is asking for it. I think it was pretty stupid. When it happened in Lifetime, you know, I kind of clenched. I was like, oh, God, you know. Because in this day and age, in you know, the Premier League or God, even anywhere, especially in Champions League games, you know, I keep feeling like these really soft penalties are given out left and right, and I don't like it personally. But with this specific incident, the contact that Emerson makes with Jota is, maybe it's generous to say it's shoulder to shoulder because he is coming in from the back. It's like the back of his shoulder, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the center of his back, I guess, is what I'm saying. Maybe there isn't a difference in most people's brain. Maybe there is in mine. But to me, I still equate that to a 50-50 challenge. And like you said, when we were growing up, that a 50-50 challenge was never, unless it's totally egregious, which right. Maybe this is egregious in some people's books. Unless it's totally egregious, a 50-50 challenge is just physical play. It's not a foul. And for me, Jota, maybe it's unfair to say he's looking for it, but I think he knows what he's doing by like planting his leg in between the defender to sort of create that barrier as Emerson is coming in. And it's a sort of shoulder to shoulder 50-50, although he's kind of coming in somewhat from the back. There's no lower body contact or anything. And I think kind of the reason why contact is made is because Jota like steps inside to shield. And I don't know, when it's shoulder to shoulder like that, you can argue is a shoulder to shoulder, it might be egregious, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, that would be incredibly soft for me in my eyes. But it seems to be the diverging opinion from just about every pundit, because pretty much everyone after the game was saying it should have been a penalty. So maybe I have my Spurs goggles on, but you know, if I see that in another game where I'm a neutral, I don't think that'd be a penalty either. So, or I'd definitely like to think that would be my opinion. So not a pen for me personally.
Reach out to Kyle and I separately. Tell us if that's a pen or not. I'm curious what the listeners think, because you know, you and I are divided on that. And I've seen different discourse on the Twitter webs out there as well, where people are on both sides. The most strong are Arsenal and Tottenham fans. So it's funny, not even Liverpool. So I would love to see what the neutrals think, because as a neutral, I thought that was a penalty. Lastly, and let's just glaze over this because we've been on this game for a while, from the reffing perspectives, the Salah handball that led to Liverpool's second goal, where Trent fired it in to Andy Robertson. At live time, I thought this was a handball because it bounced off and it played and it led to a goal. But reading the official rule, where like using your hand to score, but he didn't use his hand to score. I don't think that's a handball as written by the law, even though it's like really questionable.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess if the laws are in a certain way and it matches that, then fair like enough.
Last season, that was a handball, but they changed the rule in the off season.
Definitely. Definitely. 100% would have been a penalty or a handball last year. But for me, from a non-technical perspective, just as someone who like is growing up, I honestly didn't think it was a handball either. But the more I see it, like the day after the game and whatnot, like I guess I didn't really think about it in lifetime. But to me, what makes a difference is I think headed it first or chested it and then it hit his arm. And yeah. Usually I think that pretty much rules it out. But I do think his arm helped him trap it. But is that enough to say it's a handball? Probably not, honestly.
Not everything is black and white, unfortunately. No. And that's a tough one. I don't think he went into that trying to use his hand for sure. But
I think it would have been incredibly harsh if it was given a handball. How about that?
Yeah. All right. I mean, what a game. I mean, there's a lot that we spent on reffing, but there was back and forth play. Some players stepped up. Dele Alli ran hard. So, you know, that, you know, everyone goes crazy there and thinks he's the next coming of Messi. So, yeah, a great game. One of the only games that we had this window. So we heavily enjoyed it. We'd be remiss. We took a week off, and you know, a team's been flying under the radar a little bit. We haven't mentioned them a ton on the pod given their schedule, but like we've said many times, you can only play the games that you have on your schedule, and they're winning all of them. And that team would be Arsenal Football Club, team in North London. If you were, you know, if you went on PremierLeague.com and just took a gander at the table, they're fourth. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we could talk about points per game and games played, etc. I don't really care. They're fourth right now.
Yeah.
And they took out a couple teams in the last couple match weeks, West Ham in particular, which we'll get to a second, and Leeds. And they played really well and were dominant, I would think. Or dominant may be strong, but they were the better team in both of them, for sure. So, what do we make of this Arsenal club? I mean, they, at one point in the season, which doesn't feel like that long ago, and it is a long time ago, but they were 20th with like a negative 9 goal difference. And now they're sitting in fourth. What are your just hot off the presses takes besides, you know, hating Arsenal? What are your takes on this Arsenal Football Club, and what have they done to get into this position?
I mean, I feel like I should cut my tongue out and take a shower or something after what I'm going to say. But honestly, I've been really impressed with Arsenal And I've been really impressed with Arteta and how he's gotten this team to bounce back. And I see an identity. I see more or less a style of play. The young core, which I'm sure we'll get a little more into, is excellent. I mean, there are people always said Smith Rowe and Saka. There are a lot more than Smith Rowe and Saka with that young core as well. But they're solid in the back, which, like, God, when was the last time you've said
which
that?
It hasn't been. Team? Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, like over 10 years we're talking here. Yeah, they've totally dominated. You can only beat it who is ahead of you. I know they had some other impressive wins, but this win against West Ham, and this was a West Ham team that played well also, I thought, in this match. But Arsenal, they definitely edged it. They looked the better side, you know, at West Ham as well. I hate to say it, man, but they deserve to be in that fourth spot right now based on what we've seen so far. Truly. Is that a hot take?
It is. It's interesting. So just to say, be clear, it was at the Emirates, not West Ham, but still, okay. They were the better team for sure. It's a little bit of a hot take. I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because, like, again, you can only play who's in front of you. But you look at Arsenal's wins, and I'm not trying to shit on Arsenal. This is a praising Arsenal segment. But in December, they lost to United. They lost to Everton. Shortly in end of November, they got thumped by Liverpool. They've beaten before in October. They went on a really good run of form where they beat a bunch of clubs like Villa, Leicester, Watford, etc.
And all the bottom feeders.
The last
as well.
Three games where West Ham was the most impressive win, which is what we're talking about. And Odegaard looked good. Or ESR looked good. Martinelli, I think, played really well in that game. But they beat just now Leeds and Southampton and Newcastle before that. So I have doubts that they deserve necessarily to be up there and that they're the fourth best team in the league. However, they have certainly turned it around and are winning the games that they're supposed to, which was not always the case in previous years due to bad defense or poor play or, not finishing in front of goal and et cetera.
Right.
You highlighted the defense in a second ago. I want to call that out as well because in the summer, we were all, hooing and hawing at Ben White being signed for £50 million, I believe it was, from Brighton. Yep. And yes, while I still think that's an overpayment and the value of English talent is just overinflated, like anything in the world these days, inflation is through the roof, but especially English players and their market values are just overly inflated. Even though it's 50 million, if they have a good defense, I mean, it's justifiable a little bit, right? I mean, they have a partnership in Gabriel and Ben White that's proving dividends. Left back has been a revolving door with Tierney's injury, but normally is Tierney. And then right back, Tomiyasu, I think, has been really solid for them.
He has.
Really, really solid. And so when you put that all together and you think of their defensive woes of previous season, it's one of the biggest changes that Arsenal have had. And, yes, they've struggled against better talent and better clubs, but when they're going against clubs that they should beat, those defenders are shutting them down. And that's a huge difference from previous seasons, I think.
Absolutely. And to add on top of that, another summer deal that we had huge doubts about, overpaying, is even that good, Aaron Ramsdale. As well.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that Aaron Ramsdale would be playing the way he's playing? For me, he should be England's number one. I mean, I know it's just been half a season, but Pickford has literally never convinced me. To me, that defense, who holds the key in that defense? I've been impressed with Ben White, but for me, the key is really Gabriel. I've been really impressed with him. He had some injury problems last season, was also just in a terrible defensive team as well. But now you look at that back line, it's pretty decent. Tierney, Gabriel, Ben White, Tomiyasu, all of them are solid. Tomiyasu is, yes, he kind of lacks ability going forward, but for an Arsenal team and what they're looking for, it's good. And I feel like Martin Odegaard in the cam role is really coming on leaps and bounds. I mean, I'm a huge fan of his. His weight of pass is just like perfect. His vision is so good as well.
It was against the Leeds game, right? This last week where he had a beautiful three ball, right? Yeah.
Yep. And, Martinelli now, we're starting to see him come on leaps and bounds as well. I mean, for me, I'm not saying he's anywhere close to his quality of player, but style-wise, he reminds me the way he plays of like a Thierry Henry kind of player. You know, pacey coming off the left is great with that sort of like, you know, RB finish, right? The sort of finesse.
Is Martinelli a better, is he a better goal scorer than Harry Kane now?
Oh, stop it. But hey, he has more goals. The proof's in the pudding. He has more goals. What can you say? But I've been really impressed. And, you know, Smith Rowe hasn't even been starting the last few games, and he's still banging in goals left and right. Yep. So this team, man, I mean, if they get a better center midfielder, if Thomas Partey finally shows up, I mean, he hasn't even played well.
No.
And to me, the main problem position for them is the striker position. And the fact that they're playing this well with Aubameyang for 2 years now, laying complete duds left, right, and center, and unlike Kane, if Aubameyang isn't scoring, he offers nothing. Nothing. Whereas, like, Kane, at least his all-around play can be good, and he could just be dog water in front of goal. But, God, the fact that they're doing this well without Aubameyang, it's just, it's impressive. So if they sign a big-name striker, I mean, God, I hate to think of the positive days for the Emirates ahead. God, makes me sad.
This is a team that, you know, if you believe rumors and that sort of thing, you know, Arteta was in dangerous waters not that long ago.
No more.
Seems to have swam out of those for sure, but trouble ahead. I mean, you have Norwich and you have Wolves, and those are two winnable games, you would think, but then they have City, Spurs, Wolves again, Chelsea, Brentford, Liverpool. So it's going to get tougher. We'll see it, but, you know, they can prove it. And if they do, then I'm, you know, I will be wrong, but they're much improved. That I will not argue. And, you know, they are in the thick of the top four race, no doubt.
Definitely.
Or the fourth spot, I should say, because I think the top three are still separated themselves quite a bit.
I mean, it's definitely possible because, I mean, at this point, we're not quite seeing what is going to happen with United. I think United holds the key, honestly.
Oh, but yeah.
Here's a question for you. Is Arsenal's young core of Martinelli, Smith-Rowe, Saka, Odegaard, I mean, God, you could probably throw in their center backs are young.
Yeah.
Tomiyasu's young. Does Arsenal have the best young core in English football?
Is that a
stretch? Because I'm actually starting to think that might be the case. I don't know.
It's hard to argue. I mean, I'm just thinking of going through clubs in my head. So it's I don't think it's United. It's not Spurs. You could argue Chelsea just by the breadth of players that they have that are and are not at the club right now.
Yeah. I mean, Mason Mount is still young. Havertz is still young.
I mean, Christian Pulisic is still a young player.
Pulisic still young. Yep.
So, Reece James. You could argue Chelsea. City, the problem with City is they have some good young players, but they don't play. I mean, they're just like, there's too many. City just employ too many good players.
Yeah, I mean, you have Torres.
You know, we'll get into rumors later in the December, but like Ferran Torres is rumored to be out at City, and he wants to leave this window. So I don't know. I think Arsenal maybe. Arsenal and then Chelsea.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Honestly, those are the two that stick out to me.
But what is their ceiling? And I'm not sure their ceiling is high. I still think they need more players on their squad. You mentioned striker for sure. If they want to do. If they want to make consistent top four challengers, and then, you know, they need some players before they're title challengers. But right now, they're the best young core consistently, top to bottom, I would say.
Yeah, well, they're going after some big-name strikers. I mean, they need to get in line. Everyone and their mom wants him, but a guy over in Italy for Fiorentina, Dusan Vlahovic.
I've seen a lot of teams going for him.
Can't say I've really watched him a lot, but I've heard him described as Haaland, maybe not as pacey or fast, like a freak athlete, but maybe more technical, which I'm like, damn, okay. Big, big striker, pure number nine. He could be good for the Premier League.
Speaking of Haaland, did you hear that Tom Haaland, aka Spider-Man, tried to recruit Mbappe at the at the award ceremony? Did you see that?
No, what are you talking about? I don't know. We should just move on, right?
No, I mean, great for Arsenal. I'm excited. You know, it makes me, as a neutral, like, Arsenal were really frustrating for a long time, just with you know, not adapting and seeing the same shitty game plan and defense over and over, and seeing Xhaka make the same mistakes over and over. And now that they're starting to have an identity, I'm much more interested in watching their game. So looking forward to watching them more and more as the weeks go on. All right, Boxing Day is coming up. And for those of you that are new to the Premier League or the new Ted Lasso fans that we have, Boxing Day is unique because I think all but one or two teams play on Boxing Day, which is the day after Christmas. And it's just this slate of games. And the teams don't have any rest and they won't get any rest after the game. But it's a Premier League tradition that they all play. And everyone sits their ass on the couch and watches Premier League all day. And so two of the, well, first of all, I should say, as we mentioned in the open, there have been no games canceled as of now. So we think it's going ahead, and we're assuming as of recording, which, what is today, the 20th evening, all of the games are on. And so two of the matches that, I guess we'll get to the third, but two of the matches that really catch my eye are City hosting Leicester and Villa hosting Chelsea. And starting with City and Leicester, Leicester have been so poor, and we could have a whole episode on why they've been bad this season. They have not been in a great run of form. They're ousted from the Europa League into the Conference League. Hello, Spurs. Oh, wait. No, sorry. into the Conference League. You like that one?
You bastard.
Whereas Manchester City, I swear, I think they've run 8 in a row in the Premier League, and they're just absolutely destroying teams. Whether it's 2-0, 4-0, or 7-0, they're just, the other team doesn't touch the ball, or, you know.
Yeah, I don't care. They're just such a machine, honestly. And if it's 2-0, it's usually bludgeoning.
Yeah, it's like 75% possession, and the other team has one shot on goal. No, not even on goal, just like a shot. Maybe blasted 20 yards away from goal. So, starting with City, do you think they continue? Because we're getting into the fixture congestion where they might not be able to play Bernardo Silva as much, or Gabriel Jesus might need to sit, and Bernardo Silva might need to sit. So do you think they can continue rotating at more frequently and still produce the same results? Or do you think this is a game where Leicester need it, they're desperate, they want to get a result, and City might not be playing their best players?
Will City be able to rotate, and will they rotate? Yes and yes. I feel like City is the team that can handle this crazy fixture congestion the best compared to anyone, because they literally, I mean, every game there are at least 3 or 4 changes to the starting lineup, and it just never seems to make any sort of a difference just because Pep has them so drilled. And I feel like around this time of year, there's always at least one player who starts to get a lot more minutes. You know, we're not really sure who that's going to be, but last season, you know, Phil Foden, you might remember, was not starting a lot of matches early on. And then around this time of year is when he really started, you know, hitting pay dirt and playing very regularly. So I see the same thing happening for City. I mean, they're just such a machine. And I feel like, if anything, they'll probably be the squad who can handle the crazy fixture congestion the most, because they could make like 8-9 changes, and it's almost like nothing would change, really. The only thing that really concerns me is if they change out a lot of their defenders, maybe. Yeah. Even if Leicester need it. But if Leicester lose, it's not the end of the world. You know, it's kind of like a game against Liverpool City. A game against City, especially right after, you know, going through this really bad COVID phase. I would see it how Spurs fans saw this weekend going into the Liverpool game. It's honestly a free hit, is kind of how I would approach it.
Yeah, I'm not going to predict a Leicester win by any stretch, but City, not even players that came off the bench, but players that didn't even play against Newcastle that are completely healthy. Nathan Ake, Ilkay Gundogan, Phil Foden, Jack Grealish. Didn't even play.
Yeah,
exactly. So they're full health. And you will probably see Grealish and Gundogan for sure against Leicester, fully rested. And I mean, Gundogan, I mean, fantastic player. Grealish his way at City, but I mean,
fantastic. I mean, I think Zinchenko started last game. He'll probably take a seat for, I mean, I don't know.
He might play because Kyle Walker's has a knock, so he might still play left back. But
Cancelo outright or something.
Yeah, but
God, what a player!
God, Cancelo. Yeah, could have a whole podcast on him. Other game that was interesting this weekend, Aston Villa hosting Chelsea. So you have Steven Gerrard, newish manager at Villa, trying to find his form and his best lineup and et cetera, at Aston Villa, going against Chelsea team that you have to say, it's not in great form. This is their worst they've looked all season. Can't put the ball in the net. Lukaku's been mostly out, but out and in of the lineup. To me, I mean, this is the opportune time for Aston Villa to get a result against a Chelsea team that's kind of, that isn't just kind of, is hobbling with a lot of injuries and players out with COVID and whatnot. I think this could be a draw or a win for Aston Villa. I know Leon Bailey is still out, but I think there's a lot of quality and a lot of opportunities that Chelsea were vulnerable against, against Wolves, that Aston Villa can take advantage of. So I'm going to go with a Villa upset with a draw or win in this game. What do you, what, how are you feeling again for them against Chelsea? Man.
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree. I mean, these last few fixtures, I mean, Wolves 0-0, Everton, really, really bad Everton, mind you, 1-1, missing all their best players. They scraped by Leeds 3-2. Leeds has been terrible.
Leeds, yeah.
I mean, they tied Zenit in Champions League 3-3. They lost to West Ham the match of 4-3-2. Even then, before then, they scraped by Watford 2-1 and then drew United before then.
That's
so,
like a month ago now. So like they've been in not good form for a month. Yeah.
This whole past month, I mean, Chelsea have just been on really poor form. It's really surprising to me because, to me, their squad is so deep, and unlike City, in every single position. So I didn't really expect this. But, you know, I think Villa are trying to figure out what style of play they're going to play under Gerrard. I'm not really sure which direction they're going in terms of style, but in terms of results and how organized they are and how hard they play, Villa, they've looked good under Gerrard. I mean, I think they've got a really good record as well, so this could be a real statement to get a Chelsea scalp. So, but sadly, I'm going to sit on the fence, and I'm going to predict a draw on this one. Third draw in a row for Chelsea. You love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, they could put him right back into the top four race rather than the top of the table. And I know, you know, after they signed Lukaku, you predicted them as Premier League favorites, where I slightly went to City. But with Lukaku not playing, they've been struggling to find consistent goal scoring. I mean, from Timo Werner or Pulisic or Ziyech. So they have to find a way to generate goals because City have without a striker. So maybe they need to take one out of the playbook. I'm not sure. Lastly, Boxing Day, you know, Liverpool lead sounds like a blowout, but why we have this as a notable game is Marcelo Bielsa is on a terrible, terrible run of form at Leeds. And this is a team that we lauded last season that we really enjoyed watching, but I just don't know how much this train wreck can keep going on. I mean, this defensive game plan or lack of game plan is just frightening to watch. It's awful. I don't see any chance of improving. They've given up 36 goals this season in 18 games, which is really bad. If they lose at Liverpool, which you have to say is more likely than not, is Bielsa out?
Oh, I know we have diverging opinions on this one. And mind you, I mean, I don't know if you saw their lineup for this last game, but against Arsenal, I think it was. But my God, their team is completely destroyed and ravaged with a combo of injuries and COVID. I mean, I think their only big name player who played was Rodrigo. You know, you have Luke Ayling, who's a right back playing center back, and it's just a mess.
They're injured.
No Bamford, no Rodrigo. A lot of their midfield is gone. It's not looking good. And, you know, I think they're definitely going to lose against Liverpool. I fear they might get smacked. But where we differ in opinion, I think, Justin, because I know we've talked a little bit about this off the pod, but I wouldn't be surprised, but if I was in Leeds' shoes, I would not sack Bielsa on the back of having a really difficult schedule with these, you know, all these players missing. So I don't think, even if they get waxed 5-0, I don't think that's enough for them to lose, especially at to sack Bielsa, especially after Anfield. But, you know, there's not a lot of sympathy and loyalty, maybe not loyalty, but sympathy in the game anymore. You know, teams are ruthless, and they kind of have to be. So he's the ramen is definitely the water's boiling. Let's say that. Have we put the ramen in or not? I know you definitely have for me. God, I'm thinking about it. It's hovering above the water.
I told you in the group chat this weekend that I was eating the ramen. That's where we're at.
10 for 10. 10 for 10.
10 out of 10. It's bad. And they've been on a tough, you know, fixture list where they went to Chelsea, to City, home to Arsenal, and away at Liverpool. So 3 of 4 on the road, you know, all big six teams with a lot of injuries. Look, after that, they play Villa and Burnley. I don't even know if he makes it to Burnley. I think he's out soon. I think it's not a question of if, it's when. Whether it's this Liverpool game or the Villa game, it's really bad. Yes, they've been injured and they're missing some key players, but they've been absolutely shambolic defensively. No,
that's not an understatement.
There's no game plan. It's amazing what they're doing and how they're set up to play. It's like the anti-Conte almost, where it's just like, here, you know, come on down. The goal's open for you. And it's suicidal, I think, is the best word for it that they're playing. And so, yes, they try to go numbers forward and sprint and, you know, go out all on goal and score the goals and et cetera, but they're just leaving themselves so wide open. The last win was against Crystal Palace at the end of November, which they won 1-0. But in December, they've given up more than 2 goals per game. So I'm concerned. I think
what worries me about the Bielsa situation is you just know Bielsa's not going to change.
No, he'll never change.
More than probably, I would say him and Pep are the most wedded to their styles, like, in the world. He will never, never go defensive. And in situations like this, especially when all your strike force is missing, you kind of have to. But he is so incredibly stubborn, which I love him for. But, oh, man, they just need to shore up that back line. And I fear that he's not going to do that. And Bielsa teams, you know, their players tend to burn out and fizzle out because he's so demanding in terms of, you know, fitness. So, but, you know, people say the same thing about Klopp and Pep. So I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. Bielsa in this kind of situation, it tends to not end well. We have like 20 years of evidence for that. So
what's your score prediction for Liverpool hosting Leeds?
4-0.
I'm going to go 6-1 Liverpool.
Oh my God. That is a prediction right there.
All right, well, that's it for us. We'll be back. Let's looking at schedules, probably around concluding the Boxing Day week, which will be around the 27th or the 28th. There's two matches back to back in that, so we'll have a podcast come out around then. But look out for that. Everyone, have a great and safe holiday. Hopefully, fingers crossed, these matches don't get canceled and that everyone is safe and we'll be able to sit down Boxing Day together and watch all the games. And make sure, not on our non-existent over-the-top EPL social media accounts, but at our personal accounts, make sure you reach out to us and tell us, was the Diogo Jota foul in the box a penalty, like Justin says, or a non-penalty, like Kyle says? So reach out. I'm curious to get this anecdotal evidence. But until next week, stay safe, happy holidays, and we will see you after Boxing Day.